Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed, an effective educator, and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
All right. Well, today we are so fortunate, Jocelyn, our own amazing Kate Field. And I'll just say this right off the bat. If you choose to email CEA after this podcast, she's Kate F. I am Kate D. We frequently get each other's emails, but I think it's important right up front that if you want to engage in a future conversation, go deeper on TVAL, it's Kate F at CEA.org. But that aside, that little PSA aside, Jocelyn, I know you are very excited to talk about teacher evaluation. So I'm going to turn the floor to you to intro. Why in the world are you so excited about teacher evaluation?
Well, we're actually taping this on Halloween, and typically I would say that teacher evaluation in previous years has been something that is quite horrific and fitting for Halloween. But what I will say is that we have been working so hard with our stakeholders across the state who really care about meaningful, productive growth in teachers and ensuring that we have basically overhauled and transformed our teacher evaluation process. So I have Kate Field here with us today because she has been such a tremendous partner in the work that CEA has done, and honestly, truly a leader in the work that CEA has done to transform what teacher evaluation can look like in the state of Connecticut. And I have to say that when I say can look like, it's because we've secured legislative change. But the only way that this really makes change is if we empower and educate our teachers and our administrators and our boards of ed about what this could look like. And so we have Kate here because she truly is an expert
Absolutely.
Of what best practice is. So Kate, do you want to start with talking a little bit about some of the exciting changes that we have to the teacher evaluation system and what that looks like?
Yeah, if somebody has not even like stepped into this world, right? Most of us know what teacher evaluation has looked like. It's largely checking boxes off of a rubric. Am I a four? Am I a two? Am I a what? And there's like 27 things, none of them having a whole lot of substance or meaning to most of us. You know, we go into protracts and take care of business and then move on with our lives. So if I'm a teacher who has not really thought about overhauling teacher evaluation, it's kind of just sort of existed. How does this process feel differently for me?
That's a great question, Kate. And thanks, Jocelyn, for just being such a great partner in all of this. It's really a pleasure to be here. But to your question, Kate, how is this different and how does this look different? I'd say the potential is that it's a completely different system. And a lot of that depends on the extent to which teachers are empowered to help shape the vision of what this could be. So in terms of what's new and what's different, I would say the biggest difference is the number of restrictions that are put on by the state has dramatically decreased. And the corresponding change that that creates is just a large amount of freedom that district PDECs have to create a system that really fits their teachers and serves their students. So it's the capacity for change that exists rather than a vision of exactly what the new thing is.
Right. So say I really, you know, I had SLOs and IIGDs last year. Do I need to have those in the new system?
Again, it gets back to the PDEC and the extent to which teachers are empowered to design a system that doesn't incorporate SLOs. So the new state guidelines, and Jocelyn and I advocated strongly, would not include a requirement for a student learning objective. So there is no requirement, but there is a possibility that a district could decide to keep them.
Okay.
So teachers have to be prepared to have the knowledge that they need to advocate for a system that does not have a student learning objective. And I would say the reason not to include student objectives, there's two main ones. One, Kate, to your point, the old system was a lot of checking boxes, a lot of compliance.
Right.
And I'm a former teacher myself and a former evaluator, actually. And I know that student learning objectives are often really arbitrary learning targets that aren't particularly meaningful and don't really serve students.
Right.
So I would say getting rid of SLOs is eliminating one of those compliance aspects and changing it to something more meaningful, which is teachers setting their own professional learning goals.
Now, if I'm sitting in a district PDEC, right, and I'm having this and I've got an administrator saying things to me like, well, we can't take the student because that's the point. The whole point of everything we do is student learning.
Right.
So how can you possibly look at a teacher and know if they're growing, if their students aren't growing? Like, is it even possible for you as a teacher to grow absent that student growth? Like, how do you separate the two? What's the response to that?
Well, I would say a couple of things. One, that's how we've been measuring our teachers for the past almost 12.
Yeah, since 2000.
Almost 12 years, right? And we haven't seen this tremendous student
growth.
Are
you talking about making a data-driven decision?
That's right. Right. Yeah, we are. We're seeing
that. I've heard that somewhere.
You know, in theory, I can understand the thought process of it, right? If our teachers grow, our students grow. And in fact, if we have actual growth model plans that provide true, authentic supports and really supportive, meaningful feedback, that will happen. We will see students.
So then what's the harm in measuring it? Devil's advocate.
Because you can't necessarily measure student growth and teacher growth in a box or with a specific outcome indicator, because so many things impact student growth in a year. And
oh yes,
when we're looking at a blanket goal, 100% of my students will grow one reading level. I mean, these are the kinds of SLOs that we see out there. And honestly, if I have a class of 24 students, you know, 6 IEPs, 2 in the gifted program, probably 4 or 5 504s, you know, that's a really weird way to measure the success of my students, because they're not all coming in the same space. And there might be someone who grows, a child who has a low reading level when they come to my class. And even if they raise one reading level, they're growing. That might be the pace and speed that that child can have. Or you might have a child who has some sort of real major life-altering crisis, right? And we have that a lot. I mean, especially during COVID, we had many students who did. And, you know, that's going to impact their growth, not necessarily my skill set as a teacher, right? So there are so many ways to measure how students are succeeding in our schools. And this indicator limits it to a small little box of...
You know, so what I hear from you, and this is kind of my thought, is that if we're going to talk about student growth being meaningful, we can't take a standardized approach, because that actually really flies in the face of the concepts of personalization and differentiation when we sit there and use a standardized metric to determine growth of what really is a much more complicated variable, which is our students.
Well, we're human.
Yeah, they're people.
It's hard to...
They're not widgets.
It's hard to measure human growth in a standardized way. The other thing that's really, you know, it limits where we're growing our teachers, right? It puts the target and the focus on literacy success or math success. And to be honest, those things come when there are other growth aspects in an individual, like the ability to problem solve or take risks or, you know, those things that aren't necessarily really measurable.
Let's talk about that, because now you're talking about the fun stuff, right? And I think, you know, as a high school math teacher, when I have to do teacher evaluation goals, they're usually very much so standardized. In fact, we had departmental or PLC goals. They were very generic. And they did often talk about, you know, students will, you know, whatever, get a little bit higher in their summative test score, whatever it was. So let's flip that script and talk about what could serve as teacher evaluation goals now. Let's get excited, like, because this is where the fun part comes in, right?
Very fun.
Yeah, because it seems to me that when we really talk about this and want to get teachers excited, it's about what it could be.
Exactly.
So let's make that tangible and real. So Jocelyn, you're a fifth grade teacher. I don't know, actually, Kate, what grade level did you teach?
9 through 12.
Ah, what did you teach?
Social studies.
Oh, that's what my son wants to teach.
Yeah, it was so rewarding and I miss it every day.
I know. All right, so we'll gush about the children so, later, you know, but we'll talk about what we could do.
So there are a couple things. I think, you know, if you're an initial certification teacher who's going through TEAM, right, you can actually link your goal with a professional goal that might be kind of parallel or corresponding to what you might be doing in a team module, right? So if I'm really focusing on classroom management, that could actually just be my professional goal. And I could really focus on getting supports and meaningful feedback in that area. Because we know that classroom management is
something that impacts students. So if I'm an early career person, I got double duty going on here, so I don't have to do two separate things.
Similarly, if you're an experienced teacher and you happen to be a mentor, your professional goal could be the extent to which you are supporting that beginning teacher and helping them improve their classroom management. You know, you could have a goal about, you know, ensuring that you're utilizing culturally responsive practices. You could have a goal of, you know, just even keeping your classroom together. Like, we know that later career teachers sometimes kind of get things piled up in spaces that make it really hard to plan well or use time well or even to have kids access certain things within the classroom. So you could have a professional growth goal of how you make your classroom accessible to some of your varying learners, right? So it'd be a really great goal, you know, and there are a lot of teachers who maybe need collaboration goals. You know, there might be an outside classroom teacher, right? A library media specialist or a school social worker or psychologist,
right?
That we no longer have to link our goals to something academically based.
Well, thank goodness, because, you know, this has been sort of the bane of the existence of our specialists, right? The people who are not, who fall under teacher evaluation, but are not traditional classroom teachers. You know, how does a social worker fit this model? So it sounds like they can set an appropriate professional goal. Now, the question is, how do I know if I'm successful?
Well, the thing that's really great, and I don't know if you want to speak to this too, Kate, but that we have removed the need for standardized indicators. So you do need multiple indicators to show that you're working towards your goal or that you're succeeding in your goal, but they don't have to be a standardized system. They can be something like, I'm going to show, you could use student data, like outcome data, but you could also use journal reflections that show that you're growing. You could use photographs of student work. You could use photographs of the design of your classroom, a sample of lesson plans that are newly created based on what you've learned. You know, library books that show that you've kind of, you know, made your library more accessible or that you have more windows and mirrors in your library, all sorts of different indicators.
So you need evidence.
Yeah.
So more than, it's not so much of a measure.
Exactly.
It's more of
an illustration.
Right. The evidence of practice. So that, you know, if I say I want to be a more reflective, I want to take the time, you know, to be a little bit more contemplative after summative assessments, right? I want to look for and plan, you know, my students took this assessment. I need to know where they landed and then really think about how am I going to spiral skills if I need to. I can demonstrate evidence of my own thinking.
Exactly.
As the evidence of my professional growth.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's
what's
interesting.
Really great is that you don't have to have, after your initial certification, you can have a one-year goal, a two-year goal, a three-year goal, right? Because we know that some of these goals are pretty lofty, right?
Right.
To grow as an educator, especially if you're in a later part of your career, it's not like you just immediately have that extreme success. It's a journey, right? Through a process so that you're being able to provide your students with new and different and innovative best practices. And that might take more than a year.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about experienced educators, it's not that they're resistant to change or resistant to learning. I think the thing is your toolbox is so full,
right,
that there's a space of, okay, well, what am I going to add to it? And it's not that they're, because I mean, I think sometimes we, and I put myself in that category, you know, you get yourself lumped into the you've always done it a certain way, you're comfortable, and that's the hesitancy. And we want to get people off that. And I think the reality is that that's often not the case. It's that we've tried a lot of different things. We have experience with a lot of different things. So finding something actually truly new, engaging, and inspiring is actually harder because your wealth of knowledge is deeper.
Right.
So I'm wondering if it's like, let's say I found, you know, could being involved in like a book club, like where we're all kind of maybe a handful of colleagues and I have this real interest in, you know, kind of coming together around a particular piece
of
text.
Very worthwhile.
Like that Goldie Muhammad book, Unearthing Joy. Can you imagine if you were able to have a book club and then you could talk about how to engage in that practice?
It would have really potentially transformative impacts on your teaching in the classroom because it's meaningful. People are selecting to participate in that. They're sharing ideas together. And that's another new aspect of the new guidelines is not only can teachers, beyond their initial certificate, set goals that span up to 3 years, they can also set goals that are collaborative. So the book club discussion is really actually a perfect example of the type of professional learning goal that could have a profound impact on the practice in the classroom. And something else you said, Kay, that really resonated with me is that, you know, sometimes the old system promoted stagnation to a certain extent.
Right.
Because it promoted a formula for success that was replicable year after year after year. And once a teacher figures out this is how the formula you follow to be proficient, it kind of discouraged risk-taking. It discouraged innovation and instead promoted doing the same old thing every year. So the refreshing part about the new guidelines and the new freedom that comes with it is it's allowing teachers to identify areas of interest, areas that will have a profound impact on kids potentially, that's exciting to them, and that's where the innovation comes from. It's such a powerful message for kids to see, because if we want kids to innovate and risk take, we need teachers to be able to do that.
Speaking of another discouraging aspect of our old plan, which we haven't really talked about just yet, our ratings. And so I think that
I want to be a 4.
Again, you know,
I'm a very good guidelines person.
And the legislation have removed the requirement for ratings. That doesn't mean that a PDAC has to remove ratings. And there might be some people who find a lot of comfort in ratings.
Because I want to be a 4.
But we know that you can never be a 4.
Because I'm a 5?
No.
You're off the scale.
If we give you a 4, Kate, how can you grow?
I could be I'm a 10.
How many of you have heard, you only visit exemplary, you don't live there? Have you ever heard that?
Gosh, I think if
I would probably smack somebody that said that to me.
I probably would have been on a professional responsibilities for.
I'd have been fired. I'd have been like, Kate, you can't bitch slap someone.
I think when we talk about a discouraging practice, the ratings really hinder growth and they really take it away from a real meaningful discussion, which is, I think, part of something that we were really hoping for in mine and Kate's vision of excellence of a new teacher plan.
All right. Now I'm going to ask this, though. What if my admin, how do I diplomatically approach this, is not an engaging conversationalist?
This might be a conversation for another podcast about making sure that we have admin who are trained and skilled in being, you know, nurturers of their school climate and environment. But I would say that it's important to hold our administrators accountable for providing meaningful feedback. If you have an administrator that is not having a dialogue with you about what's great in your classroom and where you could grow and asking the question, how can I support you, right? Because that's part of this that has to work, right? Getting meaningful support in your growth, not just going straight to a corrective plan.
Right, not judgment. Support.
And a conversation. I saw you doing this. Let's talk about it. Talk to me about why you felt that that was the choice that you made. Or, wow, I see that, you know, I know that your goal is on, you know, unearthing joy. But something that I think you might want to consider first is your classroom management style, right? Like, our administrators are supposed to be the leaders of our buildings, the leaders and modelers, is that a word, of best practice. And so they are part of this process, and they have to be held accountable for providing meaningful and supportive feedback. Because if we don't have administrators having that part of it, the one other great thing about our new system is that the PDAC is also responsible for establishing our administrator support plan, which I think is new to this process. And I think
I didn't even know there was one.
And I think that that's part of it, that when what we really want, and Kate F can correct me if I'm wrong.
I'll correct you too. Don't worry.
I do know that. If teachers know what they can ask for in their PDAC, what they can do, we need you teachers to be listening to this podcast because you have rights we want to empower you to utilize.
Let's talk about that because I think, so I'm excited. I want to do a book club. I think this is going to be great. I'm really enthusiastic. How do I make sure that I don't end up in a space where by default, my district goes to SLOs, IGDs, and standardized measures? Because I heard you loud and clear. Those things are not off the table. They're just not mandatory.
Right.
So my district, in theory, could do everything exactly the same.
Exactly right.
And not take advantage of any of this. But I think that stinks. So how do I make sure my district moves in this progressive, thoughtful pattern?
Thank you for that question, Kate, because this is actually something that keeps me up awake at night. Because this is such a great window of opportunity for teachers. And in order for them to take advantage of it, they need to know the window exists. And
right.
They need to know what the potential is for change and what their rights are in advocating for that change. So CEA has really been out there trying to get the word out to teachers in terms of how do you push forward and capitalize on the areas of change that are available and maintain all of the existing protections that remain in place. And the answer to that is the Professional Development and Evaluation Committee, the PDEC. Every district by statute has to have one. And every PDEC by statute has to include teachers and collective bargaining representatives from the unions. It also includes administrators and collective bargaining representatives from their union. It also includes a paraprofessional. And the idea is the PDEC fosters this co-ownership of the evaluation process. And by statute, those people around the PDEC table have to create a new plan that aligns with the new guidelines. And just like you said, they could create a plan that pretty much strongly resembles the old one.
Yeah, they could rubber stamp it, right?
Exactly. So teachers have to make sure they, one, know who their PDEC representatives are, and they need to make sure that their voice is heard and it's heard clearly. Because the PDEC can't do anything without everyone around that table mutually agreeing to it.
That's a really important point. So if I'm sitting here listening to this podcast, riveted by our discussion and excited about the opportunity, one, I should probably reach out to my union president and say, what's our PDEC status?
Right.
Who's repping us on the PDEC? And what guidance is the union? Because the union could, in theory, right, sort of say to the person repping them, listen, it's really important that.
Absolutely.
You know, and hold the line, so to speak,
right,
on what our expectations are.
Absolutely. CEA has a PDEC implementation guide that puts forward CEA guidance. That's the intent there is, well, to help everyone around the table, but specifically the teachers at the table, understand what the opportunities are and how to advocate strongly for the changes that they want to see.
I know you emailed that out. We got something a while ago, but is that readily available on our website now?
Absolutely. It's right on our website. And as you pointed out, they can email me at Kate S. And I can email a copy directly if they can't find it on the website. But it's definitely on the website. It's easily accessible. All of our local leaders should have a copy as well. We're happy to put it in the mail if you want a hard copy. So we just want it out there. And honestly, you can feel free to share that, because I think the really nice thing about this is I think there might be some administrators who are a little maybe curious or maybe a little intimidated.
Some who will like this,
but I think
too.
That in all honesty, part of the goal of the EES Council, which includes administrators, superintendents, boards of ed, the State Department of Education, us, AFT, is that we really wanted a streamlined process that made this really easy and accessible.
Exactly.
And meaningful. And so I think that, this isn't just us being like, yeah, we don't want teachers to be held accountable. There are plenty of measures, if you look at the guidelines and understand it well, that allow for teachers who are struggling or who might be, you know, in a certain category to be supported and to be counseled in lots of different ways. But the idea is that, like, the bulk of and mass majority of our educators are superbly, wonderfully talented humans who care about kids and who are doing really good jobs. And we wanted this plan to
emphasize that
and to celebrate that. And so I think
to put faith in it, because I think part of what, you know, and you've talked about the previous models being real gotcha models, right? Like the idea that, can we catch somebody? That's not helpful. That's not professional. That's not how we want to operate.
And it didn't work either.
And it didn't work.
It didn't work. And nobody goes to work.
Lie.
I mean, I can't imagine there are people who go to work. Maybe there are, but who go, I really want to stink today at my job, and that I'm coming to work knowing that I stink.
Listen, if I'm not allowed to think that kids are willing to do that, I'm definitely not putting it on the adult.
Right. So, like, I think that was the presumption that, like, people who are struggling, you know, are like somehow owning it and like being like, woohoo, yeah, what can you do about it? And that's not true. People who are struggling,
yeah,
the ones who know, just need supports, and they are looking to their administrators to provide that. And I think that the ones who don't know, if you don't know that you're in a space where you're struggling, who are you supposed to go to? The administrator is supposed to be that conduit. You know, we shouldn't be afraid of our administrators.
I think we have to switch the messaging up from, you know, teacher evaluation is about holding teachers accountable and it's about getting rid of the bad teachers. I'd really like to change that conversation to not evaluation and accountability of bad teachers. There's always been a process, as Jocelyn said, to
That's
deal
true.
With them.
That's very true. Well,
instead, the process should be one of support and development of the vast majority of teachers who are coming to work every day who are doing their best and are overworked. So the conversation shouldn't be, how do we hold bad teachers accountable, when there's already a process for that? The conversation should be, how do we retain good, talented teachers?
And do even more with them,
right?
And inspire them.
Exactly. And on that note, I have to, before we go, because we could talk about this probably for another, probably 3 days, right? We're so proud. I'm so proud of the work that CEA has done. And honestly, Kate Field, you have been just a tremendous asset for us and any
Absolutely.
Of our members who don't know who you are. I would say favorite human on the planet, to be honest. And shameless plug, Kate and I have been working on a model plan and a ton of supports, model rubrics and goals that we will be, you know, kind of vetting with some other stakeholders just to make sure we're on the right path. But we will be making sure that we have all of those resources ready for our PDEC chairs and our local Excellent. Presidents. And so I just, again, I can't say enough about the staff that we have here at CEA and the work that they do to make sure our teachers are in good hands. And we're just in the presence of a teacher evaluation genius. So thank you very much.
Goodness gracious.
I know. Well,
and
Jocelyn,
Kate will
thank
happily
you.
Come to your local. I know that she's hit many. And so if you're in a local and wondering, like, okay, how do I jumpstart this work? You know, work with your union, because this is a space where we are enthusiastic and we have been the agents of a lot of change and development. So I say bring it on.
And I do want to just thank our model PDEC think tank that we've had from teachers across the state who've really been very helpful ears to kind of give us feedback on how we tweak our model and things like that.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
And I will say that we've had great partners across the state with CAPS and CABE and CAS and CASA. And there's one more I'm missing. And all the administrator unions that are out there supporting this work. And also the SDE has been helpful, although maybe the rollout hasn't been what we'd like to see, but I think they've been very supportive of the change in the guidelines and making sure that this process is good.
All right. Well, we'll come back and we'll check on this again and see how things are going. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at CEA.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.